This podcast includes graphic depictions of true crime cases and may contain explicit language. Listener discretion is advised.
Your only chance to evacuate is to leave with us. Planet Earth about to be recycled. Your only chance to survive or evacuate is to leave with us.
So are the words of Marshall Applewhite, co-founder of Heaven's Gate. So before we get into it, let's do some housekeeping. First, you can find our website at www.wesawthedevil.com, and you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at We Saw the Devil. Furthermore, if you would like to give our Instagram some love, you can do so at We Saw the Devil Podcast. For those of you who are enjoying the show and may want to actively support it or become part of the team, you can do so at our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/WeSawTheDevil. And for as little as $3 a month, you can actively support us. And what that entails is ad-free episodes, Patreon-only episodes, and we also, each month, do a case of the month. And what we do is we select a case somewhere in the world, and we send out postcards from that location. And it's a surprise until the last day of the month, and then we will do that. So everyone gets a cool, unique postcard from a different part of the world each month.
And in addition to that, which is really exciting, and you can always look forward to it, is that every month we send you little goodies.
We do. And this month, everyone got a serial killer coloring book. Last month, people got a Madame LaLaurie poster from New Orleans. And we just have different... Also the evidence bag.
Oh, yeah. The evidence bag was really cool. It's like a large makeup bag almost, / pencil bag. Some people are using it as purses.
Yeah.
Stickers. Don't forget, the month before that, we sent people out a self-defense device.
We did.
We called it a grenade.
Yes, it is louder than a grenade. We have a lot of cool tiers. Just check us out either on Patreon. You can also find it directly on our website, wesawthedevil.com, and see if we have a tier for you. To all of our current patrons, we love you guys. We sincerely appreciate you. And we have a really cool Patreon-only Facebook group, which we have. It's literally become a family.
It is a family.
It is. So that being said, Jackie, when was the first time that you heard of Heaven's Gate?
Since I was little, I've been obsessed with looking at the sky and what's happening in my sky, and found out about Hale Bopp, actually. And, well, what followed in the tale of Hale Bopp, obviously, it was Heaven's Gate. They were a part of it. And that's actually how I found out about it. It was all over the news in Arizona because you could see it so clearly from the skies.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, it was all over the... Seriously, it was all over the news. And they were like, there's this group called Heaven's Gate that believes that they are in the tail of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's weird. I was a little girl, so it sounded cool. I was like, all right, hello, people in the tail of this comet.
I was in, I believe, 7th grade when I heard about it. And my teacher was obsessed with it. And he continuously made all of these Heaven's Gate, Nike, Hale Bopp, alien jokes. And so I looked into it and I kind of chortled. But I didn't really deep dive on them until this episode, actually, of really getting kind of to the bottom of their belief system and so forth.
It was me who really got you into this, right? It was me being like, hey, you didn't know this, but here's a pop culture reference for you that's related to this.
Yes. And it has been a journey, guys, because this is some really crazy stuff. So how we're going to structure the Heaven's Gate series is today's episode is going to be more of like a biographical background on Bonnie Nettles and Marshall Applewhite. Because everyone knows, when you think Heaven's Gate, what's the first thing you think of?
I think of a pyramid for some reason. Like Illuminati pyramid.
Most people think of the crazy old man.
Okay, here's the thing. Is that I'm not normal and we know this.
Yes, that is correct. Most people think of Marshall Applewhite. He has the craziest eyes you can ever imagine. And he was the co-founder and talking head of it. So he utilized, and we'll talk about this later too, more in depth, but he utilized the internet before a lot of other people did, as far as a recruiting tool. And so he put out a lot of videos online The tapes, initiation tapes, and recruitment tapes. And so there's a considerable, or at least there was, a considerable amount of video footage of him. And so when people say Heaven's Gate, they think of him.
Some people think that he looks like Fred Mertz from I Love Lucy.
I see zero physical resemblance. I actually think he looks more like Leslie Jordan. Bless your heart. So let's get into it. Many of you know Heaven's Gate because of the deaths. Everyone knows about the Nike shoes, the track suits, and the mass suicide. Overall, Heaven's Gate led to the mass suicide of 39 people. That's pretty considerable.
That's a lot of people.
It is a lot of people.
It's a bad smell.
You know, and the deputies who showed up at that home in California noted the smell. It has just grown into literal cult status. Just everything about it has become a joke. And there's a really serious and interesting backstory to all of this. What this episode, again, is going to entail is we're going to go through Marshall Applewhite and Bonnie Nettles, the co-founders of Heaven's Gate, and do a background on that. So let's just go ahead and start with Marshall Applewhite. Marshall Herf Applewhite Jr. was born on May 17th, 1931, to a nomadic couple that consisted of Marshall Applewhite Sr., a Presbyterian minister, and his wife, Louise. Now, Marshall Jr. was the third child. He had two older sisters, Louise and Jane, and eventually a younger brother named John. Currently, only Louise has spoken to the press of any sort. Jane has chosen to remain anonymous, and then John was born with a substantial intellectual delay and currently lives in a state group home with around-the-clock care. Now, due to Applewhite Sr.'s job, the family would move to a new Texas city every couple of years. Like a lot of military children, they weren't able to cement any real roots or make any long-lasting friendships anywhere they landed, knowing that the countdown to moving yet again had already started. Marshall Jr. attended Corpus Christi High School, which is now known as Roy Miller High School, in 1948. When he graduated high school in 1948, and as a devout Christian, Marshall Jr. wanted to follow in the footsteps of his father and become a minister. He enrolled in Austin College, a small private liberal arts school affiliated with the Presbyterian Church, roughly 60 miles north of Dallas. And there, he became a philosophy major. By all accounts, Marshall participated in various religious student organizations on campus, and he became heavily involved in the choir, even becoming known locally for his incredible baritone voice. He graduated from Austin College in 1952 and then enrolled in the Union Theological Seminary of Virginia in Richmond. And the course was supposed to be 3 years long, and completing the program would result in him becoming an actual ordained Presbyterian minister. However, after taking courses in theology, the Old and New Testaments, and more, Marshall Jr. decided that becoming a minister was not the life path that he wanted. Instead, music was what really spoke to him. So he dropped out of the Union Theological and moved outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, to a small city called Gastonia. And he took on a job as the director of music at the First Presbyterian Church. It's also at this time that he met and married a woman by the name of Anne Pierce. And Anne has completely remained out of the media and press. As a result of that, very little is actually known about her or about their marriage. So in 1954, Marshall was drafted. And this is when the Korean War, the combat portion of the Korean War, had just ended. He and Anne lived in Salzburg, Austria for 2 years and then moved to White Sands, New Mexico. And in New Mexico, he was an instructor with the Army Signal Corps until he received an honorable discharge at the end of 1956 after obtaining the rank of sergeant. During all of this, Marshall and Anne had two children. Friends and family both reported that Marshall was incredibly devoted and loving with both his wife and his children. He had a son named Mark, born in 1957, and a daughter named Lane Ann, now known as Mary, born in 1959. During this time, he became estranged from his parents and siblings, so he shut himself off this early away from his biological family. Perhaps it was due to his early life with his parents moving around everywhere, but Marshall Jr. could not stay in one place for very long at all. He longed to travel and experience different cities and cultures, and he told various people in his life that. Or it could have been due to the fact that rumors everywhere they went swirled about his sexuality. Marshall and Anne moved all across the country, and per a resume that his sister provided the New York Times, Marshall worked as an occupational therapist in a tuberculosis sanatorium.
That's random.
Outside of Boulder, Colorado. And then, after that, became a music teacher at the University of Alabama.
That is quite the jump in difference in career.
Yeah. How can you become an occupational therapist with no degree whatsoever? But
I want to know.
Now, it was in Tuscaloosa, Alabama in 1961 where perhaps one of the most transformative events of Marshall Applewhite Jr.'s life took place. He had accepted a job teaching choral students and lost his job after he started pursuing a male student for a sexual relationship. The student reported Marshall's efforts, and he was all but run out of town by the university. Anne ended up separating from him and took their children, and he immediately became estranged from them. They ended up divorcing 3 years later, and here we have it. Marshall Applewhite Jr. was alone, with no wife, no children, and estranged from his own biological family. So he had no choice but to move on. His next position was the chair of the music department at the University of St. Thomas in Houston, Texas. He was also an adjunct music and English literature professor. There, he became very well known for his singing, yet again. And he would book local gigs, he sang in the Presbyterian Church Choir, and he also sang at the Houston Grand Opera House. He was well-liked and received by almost everyone around him. But behind the curtain, he used drugs with the neighborhood art crowd. Ray Hill, a former friend of Marshall Jr., said, quote, "We'd sit around cross-legged on bean bags with incense burning. Herf would talk his spiritualist stuff. The music was strange and there were a lot of chemicals, reefer, hallucinogens." So that was a far cry from his very proper religious front that he presented to pretty much everyone else. Regardless of how many people loved him at the university and how things appeared on the outside, Marshall was fired. The official reason given by the University of St. Thomas was, quote, "health problems of an emotional nature."
Wow. Are we kidding?
There were also rumors that he once again tried to pursue a relationship with a male student, and also reports from his co-workers that his mental state was steeply declining. After he was fired, he moved back to New Mexico for a little under a year and ran a delicatessen.
What? That's so random.
I know. And then he moved back to the Houston area to return to the art and music scene that he loved there so much. Once again, his friend Ray Hill said, quote, "Herf always had a kind of struggle with sexual guilt. If Herf could cloak his sexual encounters with a spiritual ritual event, he would." After his divorce was finalized, Marshall had moved in with another man and was also briefly openly gay. Now, we're talking about early 1960s.
That's a huge deal. Talk about losing your entire life because of something.
In Texas. Early 1960s in Texas, and he was briefly openly gay.
Ooh.
I can't even imagine. And when you combine the religious guilt and the teachings with obvious same-sex attraction, I cannot imagine. In an eventual Heaven's Gate treatise written in 1988, he described this particular time as one of, quote, "severe upheaval and personal confusion." He was having a rough time mentally. Let's move on to Bonnie Nettles. It's commonly told that Marshall Applewhite met his partner, Bonnie Lou Nettles, at a hospital that he had checked himself into for depression. And this is actually not true. I heard that story as well, but it's not true. Per an interview with Bonnie Nettles' daughter, Terry, the two of them met in 1972 in the Corpus Christi area where Marshall was doing community theater. Terry Nettles said, quote, "Someone got hurt at the drama school in the theater that Herf worked at. Herf accompanied the injured person to the hospital when he met Bonnie." That is actually how they met. Now, 45-year-old Bonnie Nettles was going through a divorce from a 23-year marriage, and Marshall had just been fired from the University of St. Thomas. Bonnie and her daughter Terry were involved in the community theater there, and Bonnie would actually do astrology charts for other women in the group. And she told her daughter that after writing up Marshall's, that his was different from everyone else's. He was destined to do great things. Now, a side note about Bonnie Lou Nettles is that she was also deeply obsessed with aliens and UFOs.
I mean, who wasn't?
Right? And her daughter, Terry, recalls that as a child, she and her mother would stand outside literally looking for aliens and UFOs.
I mean, again, who doesn't?
I certainly do.
I constantly do.
Bonnie Lou Trousdale was born on August 29th, 1927 in Houston to devoutly religious Baptist parents. And she just immediately loved all things science. She wanted to become a doctor, but due to cultural norms at the time, became a nurse instead. She graduated from the Herman Hospital School of Professional Nursing in 1948 and married Joseph Segal Nettles, a successful businessman, a year later in 1949. They would go on to have four children together. As she got older, Bonnie developed an interest in spiritualism, mediumship, and the occult. And in February of 1966, she joined the Houston Lodge of the Theosophical Society in America. Now, this group is actually still in operation. It's still there.
Are we serious?
We are serious. And on their website, it's houston.theosophical.org. And if you go to the What is the Theosophy? The three declared objects of the Theosophical Society. 1, to form a nucleus of the universal brotherhood of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, caste, or color. 2, encourage the comparative study of religion, philosophy, and science. And 3, to investigate unexplained laws of nature and the powers latent in humanity. And it gives you a very long write-up of what theosophy is. And there are some basic ideas that it calls out. One life pervades and sustains the universe. They believe in ghosts and spirits and things like that. It's literally like your kind of old school spiritualism is what it appears to me.
I mean, it seems all good and stuff. I mean, it seems harmless, right?
Yeah. The last one on their page being, the human pilgrimage takes us from our source in the one, through experience of the many, back to union with the one divine reality. Our goal is thus to complete the cosmic cycle of manifestation with full conscious realization of ourselves. I mean, it's just your regular New Age stuff, right? They have a lot of events at the Theosophical Society there in Houston, and a lot of mediumship. You know, paranormal themed things too. So that's what Bonnie Lou Nettles was into.
I like her last name, Nettles. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of Salad Fingers.
I was about to say it reminds me of Salad Fingers.
It's a Nettles.
So Bonnie became affiliated as well with a spiritualist group who specialized in seances and channeling entities. She was drawn to psychics, clairvoyants, and mystics. By all accounts, her marriage was solid until she started focusing on her belief in the occult, and this pushed her husband, Joseph, away. And he ended up filing for divorce, which was rare, in 1972.
I guess he just wasn't all about it, was he?
No. Now, Bonnie met Marshall at the local theater, and they became close friends almost immediately. Together, they read and studied the King James Bible, as well as the life of St. Francis of Assisi. Bonnie was personally incredibly interested in St. Francis and believed that he spoke to her in spirit form when she channeled him during her seances. They also shared science fiction literature, especially when it came to the topic of UFOs and extraterrestrials. Even though the two came from wildly different backgrounds, they both believed that some sort of Armageddon was coming. Marshall believed that the actual biblical sense of Armageddon was coming, and that only the righteous would enter the kingdom of heaven. Bonnie believed in UFOs, science fiction, and spiritualism. She was closer to an atheist, but believed that there would be an end-of-the-world event. She told Marshall that their meeting was foretold to her by extraterrestrials, that they were destined to meet, and that he was to be a spiritual leader. And what was so interesting to me, too, is that they shared a platonic friendship and bond, and the expression of sexuality was explicitly forbidden.
That's a little suspicious.
Why is it suspicious?
He's obviously gay.
He was very gay. And, you know, I can't imagine how difficult for him it was at that time. I mean, getting divorced, losing your children, I almost wonder if the reason why he ostracized and estranged himself from his family is because he was gay.
More than likely. Especially with that kind of, like, hard-line Christian background. It's not uncommon.
No, it's not. So, with a newfound friend in Bonnie, they partnered up. They ended up founding the Christian Art Center. It closed down after a few months, and then they founded the No Place, K-N-O-W, the No Place, in its stead. And that was a metaphysical center focused on the theosophical and occult teachings that Bonnie Nettles followed at the time. Also, per a New York Times article, and this is a direct quote, okay? Quote, Patsy Swayze, the mother of actor Patrick Swayze, who worked with Mr. Applewhite in a theater group in Houston, said she remembered many of the actors and actresses gossiping that their, quote, normally well-spoken colleague was suddenly starting to act strangely, talking about UFOs and preaching his strange religion. He apparently got a little weird.
I mean, I wonder if he was, it seems like he was probably a little weird to begin with, and now he's getting real weird.
Getting really, really super weird.
Like, we can't even be in public with you, kind of weird.
Right, exactly.
You can't handle yourself, you're just talking about UFOs at this point.
Yeah. He and Bonnie attempted to spread their beliefs at local churches and metaphysical centers, but they were not well received at all at any of the speaking engagements that they had scheduled. They decided that they needed to move. They needed to go elsewhere. So around Christmas time of 1972, Marshall Applewhite went to his sister's house in Dallas to say goodbye. Simultaneously, Bonnie Nettles sent her three minor children to live with her father, and her oldest, Terry, then 20, was basically left out on her own to fend for herself. She had to get an apartment and figure out her life. They had decided to hit the road to fine-tune their belief system and see if either of them could receive signs from the universe. And no one could have predicted that this was just the foundation of what was to come.
Tune in for the next installment of Cults Uncovered, the second episode of Heaven's Gate. And this is going to be a wild ride.
Yes, the next episode will cover their travels, recruitment, and the fine-tuning of their belief systems.
The weirdness.
So you will not want to miss that. Again, you can find us at WeSawTheDevil.com. You can find us at Facebook and Twitter at WeSawTheDevil and on Instagram at WeSawTheDevilPodcast.
Thanks, everybody. Until next crime.